The American Recovery and Reinvestment Act that I will sign today, a plan that meets the principles I laid out in January, is the most sweeping economic recovery package in our history.
That nearly $1 trillion stimulus package kicked off a presidential tidal wave when it comes to spending. And I hate to break it to you, but this guy wasn't much better. Now we have the guy at the helm who really has no idea what he's talking about.
What am I doing here?
And he is about to finally push our massive accumulated debt over the edge.
Biden is proposing an unprecedented infrastructure plan that does more than repair roads and bridges. $2.2 trillion.
Another $2 trillion here and there. And you get $1 trillion, and you. It is going to end in the death of the dollar. The numbers now show that's exactly where we're headed. And it will result in an all-powerful government, currently run by the most radical leftist politicians we've ever had in power, pushing now for state-controlled digital currency. Goodbye to all your private savings, your private spending, and your dollar. Tonight, I show you what's ahead for this economy and your life if we continue down this road. Tonight, dollar decimation, how Biden's spending spree will end our currency as we know it. Hello, America. Welcome to the program. Tonight, I want to take a break from what everybody is talking about because it's important that we learn a lesson. I want to show you what the left is actually doing right now in Washington, D.C. The news of the day, while it may seem important, and at times it is really important, it is truly a stage play. It is a big distraction. I told you this back when I was at Fox about the Obama administration. They will keep you so busy here, but what are they doing with the other hand? Watch the other hand. Well, today I'm going to show you what they want you to look at and what they're actually doing. Tomorrow, what they want you to look at is the House is scheduled to vote on making Washington, D.C. the 51st state. Outrageous. This is crazy. Look at the hypocrisy. I mean, this is coming from the party that just accused Donald Trump and the GOP for being dictatorial, for pushing through immigration reductions and allocating funds to build a border wall. That's what a dictator would do. Well, how many people do you think are going to be saying that tomorrow? Never mind the fact that Joe Biden is keeping the immigration reductions in place and is now considering finishing parts of the wall. But while they were shouting dictator, they've now obtained total government control and are discussing packing the Supreme Court, creating states so they never lose power again. Now, who's the dictator? Why stop at D.C.? I mean, if we just turn every blue city in the country into a state, well, I mean, we can get it over with quickly. All right. That's what they want you to talk about this week. But that is a distraction. Turning D.C. into a state is not going to pass through the Senate. It has 0% chance of actually happening. So why are they doing it? Well, because it's a big show. What is happening in the other hand? While the House is playing games with D.C. statehood, look what really is being discussed in the Oval Office this week. Negotiations over Biden's historic social infrastructure plan. They're going into overdrive. This is the plan that came out a couple of weeks ago. They want to spend over $2 trillion on everything. Infrastructure, you know, trains, bridges, roads, paid leave, health care, free college. All of this when they are spending records amount of dollars already. Let me bring up the U.S. debt clock. I think this should be on the lower third of every news station and maybe every station all across America. But nobody seems to care anything about this anymore. Maybe it's because $28 trillion is so big you can't even imagine. Now, CBO predicted a $2.3 trillion deficit by 2021. Well, we're nearly $1 trillion over that estimate already this year.
We are spending money at such an insane rate. I said it's like spending money like it's going out of style. It is. That's exactly what's going on. The paper dollar you currently have in your wallet will soon, I believe in the next 5 years, could be sooner than that, will be converted into a new, what is being called, DUSD, digital U.S. dollar. Think Bitcoin, except, you know, run by a bunch of people that want to control everything in your life. Think Bitcoin without any privacy. Think Bitcoin where they want to control everything you do. If the word converted makes you worry, wait until I show you what has happened every single time the U.S. government has converted our money into something else. You lose every single time. I'm going to come back to that later in the show because it ties right directly into the power that they are so desperate to grab right now. But I want to first state this. Have you noticed? Nobody seems to care about fiscal responsibility anymore. Oh, I mean, they campaign on it, but no one ever does anything about it. To the contrary, not only do they refuse to even try to reduce, they double down and spend more. And the Republicans are just as guilty as the Democrats. But it started in the 1960s. And this is important. It started back in the 1960s when they birthed the federal welfare state. It was the war on poverty. Since 1964, this government has been fighting a war on poverty. The stats on poverty have not moved. It is a failed experience, or a failed war, if you will. This monolith has ballooned to 4 independent agencies, 10 cabinet level departments. In total, they fund 89 welfare programs. They provide cash payments, food, housing, medical care, social services, job training, development, and education. Since LBJ began this, we have spent on the war on poverty $20 trillion on welfare. This, he said, would be expensive. It's going to be a war, but one we can win. $20 trillion since LBJ was in office about 55 years ago. Okay, well, let's put this into perspective with other wars. If you added up all of the money spent for every single war the United States has ever engaged in, from the Revolutionary War to today, the total cost, adjusted to today's dollars, so I'm adjusting for inflation, is $7 trillion. The war on poverty is how much? This is the actual wars? This is the Manhattan Project? This is everything? World War I, World War II? What we've been spending for the last 20 years, that's all of the money added up from the 1700s to 2020, and it's $7 trillion? And since 1967, welfare spending has tripled that amount, 55 years. Okay, do you remember when Obama campaigned on cutting the federal deficit in half by the end of his first term? We all laughed, and we all now know how that turned out. It ballooned over $1 trillion. But I want to make sure you understand this is bipartisan. Before Trump was elected, and this is one of the things he said, but I don't think he ever meant it. He believes in deficits. He said this to the Washington Post. We're not a rich country, but we're a debtor nation. We got to get rid of, I've talked about the bubble, we got to get rid of the $19 trillion in debt. And I think we can do so fairly quickly. How's that working out for us? Put the debt clock back up on the screen. Because when Trump talked about $19 trillion in debt, that's when he came into office. We're now, 4 years later, at $28 trillion and climbing. But it's not the Trump administration, because it's gone. I mean, it's, what is it, 19 parsecs that the Millennial Falcon? Anyway, I mean, we have gone hyper light speed. It's not hard. But for some reason, the government thinks that it can ignore the basic fundamental economic rules that everyone, since the beginning of time, has had to obey. Math is math. And here's what's happening to your family. If your family operated like the government does, the median household income is $68,000. If you spent like the government does, that family would have to spend $132,000 this year, which would mean they would have to put $63,000 on credit cards. But remember, you're the government. You started the year with all kinds of credit card debt. You would, for the average family, already be $540,000 in debt on the credit card. This year, you've just put another $65,000 or $63,000 on the card. Your family would not last long. But the government is telling us, it's okay. It's okay. I want to show you some charts that show how much it's not okay. As of this year, every single American, including all of our children, their share of that debt is $66,000. So if everyone was a taxpayer, which doesn't happen, only about half are, and we taxed children, everyone would have to write a check of $66,000 a year. Here's the good news. Our children won't be able to write that check for a while, so let's give them 20 years. That number doubles in 20 years. That's what we're enslaving our generations, our next generations into. You want to talk about immoral? As a percentage of GDP, gross domestic product, everything we buy, sell, make, public debt is now the highest it's been since 1946. And remember, back then, we were cleaning up after the Great Depression, the Manhattan Project, and all of World War II. Public debt was at 106% of GDP. We're at 102, and I don't know what we got. Look at what shutting down the economy and stimulus after stimulus after stimulus has done to us. We're now at 102%, and before Biden's $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan passes. But this is only part of the reason why the left is trying to distract you with ridiculous things like DC statehood. They know you're never going to pay attention to the debt and the deficit. No, this is what they're really doing this week. And getting this bill passed, this is the first step into making the insanity of the Green New Deal a reality. So you know, not even 6% of this infrastructure bill goes to roads and bridges. You see, Democrats, because they love to change the language, have changed infrastructure into anything they dream up. According to Joe Biden, broadband internet is infrastructure. Okay, not really, but okay. So let's go to the next step. Senator Gillibrand, paid leave, child care, caregiving, all infrastructure. Wait, what? While we're adding to the list, could I just get a chili cheese fry plate? I mean, just maybe some ice cream too? And if you tell me no, I'd like to know why you're not calling that infrastructure, but child care is infrastructure. I want to show you a list of just some of the things that Biden wants to cram through while the majority of the country is distracted. I'm only going to show you some of the lowlights, not the highlights, the lowlights. Their social infrastructure plan includes government takeover of broadband internet. That way they can address racial injustice. They're also going to address injustice for racial injustice everywhere. I don't even know what that means. Paid community college. Retrofitting houses to be more green. Whose house? What are you doing to it? What's it going to cost? Do I have a choice? Doubling down now on climate science and eliminating racial and gender inequalities. How? What? This is the Green New Deal that we all laughed at and said would never package. They just repackaged it as a jobs and infrastructure bill. Nobody would ever pass the other one. They're getting this one through. This is what's being debated right now between White House and the Congress this week. While we're all talking about what happened a year ago in Minnesota, it's never seeming going to end. And talking about DC statehood. And if they can't get it done in a bipartisan deal, the Democrats will push through via budget reconciliation. Oh, there's so much unity going on. Are you feeling us come together? This is what is hiding in the left hand while we're being fed things like DC statehood. But there's one more thing they don't want you to see. And that is the one thing the Republicans didn't have. The Republicans went along with the spending. But one of the reasons why Donald Trump is not our president is because there were too many powerful people that had another plan. They had the escape hatch. We can print and print and print and print and print because we know how it's going to end. I'm going to show you how they think it's going to end and probably will. What will happen to the U.S. dollar and your life savings. Back in a minute. I am somebody who likes to spread out the risk because I don't know what's going to last at all. I mean, when you see the numbers, you know the dollar is not going to last very long. You'll see the numbers on the stock market. I mean, we're talking 1929 is going to pale in comparison. And Bitcoin, I can't see the government giving up. I mean, I have Bitcoin. I want it to be. But in the end, not counting on that. I don't know what you can count on. I just know that I don't buy it for an investment. I buy it in case the world goes insane. And it's insane. I buy gold from Goldline. And now I don't put everything in it. You know, about 10% of whatever you have in investments, probably a really good idea. This week, they have a weekly special for both physical delivery and self-directed IRA accounts. Right now, they're offering 6% in free metals delivered directly to your door with a qualifying self-directed IRA order for retirement accounts. Spread your risk. They are waiting to hear from you now. Don't make a decision. Do your own homework. Find out if it's right for you. 866-GOLDLINE. 866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com. I want you to know I've been in this rodeo before, and I have warned of these things before. This is the most reminiscent of 2006 and 7 before the big crash. I can tell you I don't know when this is happening, but I'm telling you now it is coming. And all of the experts, all of the government, all of the people that are on television are all incentivized to not tell you the truth. And they will say there's nothing to worry about. Even though economists everywhere are sounding the warning sirens, even the Congressional Budget Office is warning our rate of spending is unsustainable. Public debt is set to surpass 200% of GDP by 2051, and that's going to happen a lot faster than that. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell hilariously admitted that U.S. debt is on an unsustainable path. But are they stopping the printing of money? Nope. I want to show you something that I think is staggering. Bring up the slide from Bank of America. You'll see this, Bank of America. Inflows to stocks over the past 5 months. That's the first bar. So how much money has gone, new money has gone into stocks? $569 billion. But prior to that, the money that went in over the last 12 years was a lot less than what we've put in the last 5 months. Wait a minute. Where's that money coming from? What's happening there? We've just juiced our stock market more by more money, pushing more money into it than over the last 12 years. Uh-huh. So where's the money coming from? Well, let me show you. And this is a pittance. This is you. You'll see the dark line starting in 2010 with Obama. You'll see that dark line, it barely raises anything from income tax. That's the money you pay the government. Okay. You'll see in 2019, it's fairly healthy. It rises with Donald Trump and it gets fairly healthy and equal, starting to balance a little bit more. 2020 COVID, it's over. 2021, it's over. But look what happens. This is one quarter. This is the amount, the dark line is the amount of money coming to the government in taxes from you. And the orange line is the redistribution of wealth, the money that the government is paying out. And this is just for the average citizen. This doesn't mean all of the big bailouts of all of the big banks. Do you know that the Fed is adding $1.5 trillion into the market every year? $1.5 trillion, just printing it up. All of the signs of a major economic disruption are here. No one is telling you. I want you to see something from the Fed itself. If you understand economies and inflation, you understand how important the velocity of money is. This is the history of the velocity of money since 1960. Money velocity is the measurement of how often that money exchanges hands from one place to another. So let's say you get a loan from the bank, and the bank gives you the loan because you want to build a house. Well, you take that money and you give it to the contractor. The contractor takes that and gives some of that money to different places, but then he also takes some of that money and goes to a hotel. And then when he's at the hotel, he rents jet skis. And that person who runs the jet ski, they take that and they buy something and buy a new TV and on and on and on. How many times is that dollar spent before it gets back to a bank? If the money velocity is high, it means people are spending and the economy generally is healthy. In the late 1990s, cash was flying all over the place. This is the tech bubble, right? But look what happened. After the financial crisis in 2008, it began to go down. People started to freak out and they were holding on to their dollars. Beginning last year, cash flow all but stopped. No one was spending money, and the banks now have stopped giving out loans. But why? This is huge. This comes from JP Morgan Chase, the largest bank in the country. They recently reported to their shareholders over 400% increase in profits. Okay, how does a bank make money? Generally speaking, through investments or from loans. You know, they give out a loan and charge you interest, and that's how they make money. Well, at the same time they had 400% increase in profits, their loans doled out to the public dropped by nearly half. Deposits are coming in, but loans are not going out. And this data is similar to for most, if not all, the top five banks in the country. So what does that mean? It means people don't have to go to the banks because they're getting the money from somewhere else and they're spending that money. Where's that money coming from? The government. And because the government is doing this and we are now operating under modern monetary theory, which is bullcrap, but it basically means that you believe that there are no ramifications for printing money, as much money as you want. They think that the government can continue to print as long as they want to. But one thing under MMT has to happen. The banks have to be issuing the loans. Then when it comes back to the banks, everybody makes money. Well, they're not even following their own jacked up rules. Banks are not making loans. In fact, I think it was Citi. It was one of the big banks that came out and said, we're not going to make any small business loans at all until PPP is done. Wow. So if we're fixing the country with modern monetary theory and they're already broken the rules, what is coming next? We are putting all of our future online for a broken system that seems like witchcraft in the first place. So what happens next? Well, the feds most likely will have no choice but to start to force these banks to issue loans unless governments decide, you know what, just going to keep paying people. Okay. That will unleash about $2.5 trillion out into the streets. Either way, that's where one word will rear its ugly head. Hyperinflation. I've read the journals of people who lived at those times in Germany. They said one day we didn't even know what it meant. Literally by the end of the week, it was the only thing that we were talking about. That means your dollar isn't worth very much, and it continues to fall at mind-breaking rates. Inflation is already going up, but we don't have anything like hyperinflation. But the Fed is pretending like the inflation that's going up isn't happening or is no big deal. They've already said that they don't plan on doing anything about inflation, and the government is hiding what the true inflation rate actually is. Have you been to a gas station? Have you paid for natural gas or heating oil? Have you bought peanut butter and jelly? Jif has just gone up. Coca-Cola is going up. Everything is going up. The official projected inflation rate for the Fed this year is 2.6. Does it seem like things have only gotten 2.5% higher to you? Consumer prices are skyrocketing. Food, lumber. Have you bought plywood? Gas. Everything's on the rise. So how can the official numbers seem to contradict what you and I are seeing when you go and buy stuff? Well, that's because the methodology they use to measure inflation was changed in the 1980s. They moved it away from being a measure of your cost of living, needing to maintain a constant standard of living. That's great. So basically, they can continue with these irresponsible spending ideas, out of control spending, while they make it seem like it's not their fault that you're going broke. So what's the true inflation rate? I'm going to show you a graphic here. The inflation rate calculated both today and how it used to be. Right now, it's over 6%, and it's climbing, and it's going to start climbing rapidly. This is just the beginning. Remember, banks aren't even divvying out loans yet. The Fed will have no choice but to tell these banks to open up the tap because people are going to need money. Imagine what $2.5 trillion will do to 6% inflation. Too many dollars chasing too few goods. The writing is on the wall. Japan just offloaded $5.8 billion in U.S. debt. They're cutting their losses before the losses get too big. And still, the Biden spending spree continues unabated. Inflation will be one of the obvious warning signs that this is all coming down. But remember what follows. Do you remember what happened to Greece? Their debt to GDP was 130%. We're at 102%. The people of Greece first began hearing talks of austerity to combat their country's out-of-control spending, but it didn't work. It didn't work there, and it won't work here. It wasn't long before the government mandated capital controls. People could only withdraw $66 a day to feed their families, pay their bills, or anything else they needed to get by. $66 a day. So what does this mean for you and your family? First of all, please get your money into a safe bank. What is a safe bank? Well, it's not one of the big five. It means a local or regional bank, not one connected to national or international. The more local, the better. One that's not associated with Citibank, Bank of America, or any of these others, because they're all operating the same way. Small business owners and entrepreneurs, you're going to have to get creative about how you get access to capital, because banks aren't doing that lending anymore. If you're a small business owner, you might have to turn to equipment financing or invoice factoring as a means to get a loan in the next year. Personally, I think this is the beginning of the destruction of the dollar, and the working class, the entrepreneur, the independent class. It's kind of a nice payday for the banks that will take a loss or a haircut in anything they have in U.S. dollars, because all of us will. But they've already put so many onto their ledger sheets. If it's cut by half, that just probably returns them to normal. The government will continue to spend dollars almost as if it's going out of style until it is out of style. And a big change for the greenback. It's coming, and very soon. I'll show you next. you have to keep what is yours. And the people that play by the rules are going to be the ones that are hit the hardest. I saved my money. I worked hard. Let me tell you about home title theft, where cyber thieves remove you from your home's title and become the owner. Get Home Title Lock. If you're on Facebook, that there was a huge breach there. Just I don't know. It was just announced, I think, last week. Facebook had 500 million accounts exposed to cyber thieves. Are you on Facebook? According to a retired FBI cybercrime expert, everything thieves need to take over as the new owner of your home was leaked just through that one. Name, address, personal information, it's all out. The thief forges your signature on a quit claim and says, no, they sold me the home. They don't check with you. It's fine, right? Then he takes out a giant loan, skips town, and you're left with the debt. And they repossess the home, which you thought was yours. Don't let this happen to you. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. Go there now. HomeTitleLock.com. Sign up for 30 free days protection during this high-risk breach. HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code RADIO. This is the part where the rubber really meets the road. This is where it gets tough for everybody. Conservatives, libertarians, liberals, everybody. Most people have overlooked this scenario. Inflation is rising. Banks may be forced to unleash the cash that they have hoarded in their underground bunkers. And there is a problem coming. One way or another, we are just flooding this engine, and it will stop. So why do they think they can bring all this money back? Well, how they do that, when inflation rises, you raise interest rates. Well, if you raise interest rates, not only do you suffer, not only do the loans stop going because you can't afford them anymore. If you have an adjustable rate, well, can you afford your house? And who else has an adjustable rate? In a way, the United States government. They can't afford an interest rate going up. So what happens? Well, I believe this is the exit strategy, the greenback going digital. Right now, there is a global arms race to see who can be the first to implement the first state-backed digital currency. Think Bitcoin, but controlled by a government and a central bank. The race went into overdrive last year. The European Central Bank publicly announced in October that a digital euro was coming. 2 days ago, Britain's finance minister announced a new task force to tackle the implementation of Britcoin. 80% of the central banks around the world are looking to get this done. 80%. And guess who else is pushing this? Of course, the World Economic Forum. Moving forward. You know, as we move forward, I think my good rule of thumb to follow here is whatever the World Economic Forum is pushing, go the other way. There is way too much firepower backing the push for a digital U.S. dollar. It's coming whether we want it to or not. So what does it mean for you and me? I mean, convenience, right? Don't have to worry about anything. For an early glimpse, all we have to do is look at the model that everyone seems so enamored with lately, China. China is leading the world on this. They're the first major economy to already implement a state-backed digital currency. Now imagine what an authoritarian country like China could do with this. It's obvious why the Chinese Communist Party is so enamored. You can punish people, you can reward people, you can track people all in real time. Oh, isn't that great? And they could also get around all those pesky U.S. or United Nations sanctions. They can just take one step closer to unseating the dollar as the global reserve currency. But there is also that big boon for the largest police state in the world, and that is the tracking ability for everyone at all time. Now you know why every country in the world is racing towards going digital. It's why I invested in Bitcoin, but I don't know how long that's going to even last because I can't see governments giving up that power. In essence, privacy is now the enemy of modern government, and that's why they hate cash. It's too hard to track. Listen to this from the Wall Street Journal. Quote, digitized money looks like potential macroeconomic dream tool for the issuing government. Usable to track people's spending in real time, speed relief to disaster victims, or flag criminal activity. With it, Beijing stands to gain vast new powers to tighten President Xi's authoritarian rule. But that's not just China. This is why everyone wants it. Right now, you have the choice to keep your spending habits private. You can pay in cash, you can use Bitcoin, anything. Let's say you don't want the government to know whether or not you bought a gun or you subscribed to the Blaze TV because it was so dangerous. That goes away with the digital U.S. dollar. This is the end game for conservatives, privacy, anyone who doesn't believe in a big state. Cancel culture is already bad. But what happens when the government decides to cancel money if it's getting spent on things they don't like? Or if they're saying too many people are buying this and it's causing the price to go up, so you no longer can buy that. They have $100 set aside for that news subscription. Yeah, it's the Blaze. Poof. Now you don't have it. Or you can't spend it where we tell you you can't spend it. It could be done to you, to firearms manufacturers, or a news outlet. They deem fake news. The Treasury is already signaling to what they have planned. Last year, they proposed a rule to regulate Bitcoin transactions. Why? Because they can't see what the money is being used for, which is really one of the main reasons to use cryptocurrency in the first place. This is Janet Yellen just a couple of months ago.
I don't think that Bitcoin, I've said this before, is widely used as a transaction mechanism. To the extent it's used, I fear it's often for illicit finance. It's an extremely inefficient way of conducting transactions.
Yeah, anything that takes away their power, they say is dangerous. Directly after she said that, Bitcoin's value nosedived. And it's obvious what she's setting up here. Yellen said that Bitcoin is being used for illicit transactions. Okay, but so is regular cash. She also said it was inefficient. You don't want to know why? Because the government doesn't control it. That's why they don't like unregulated cryptocurrency. It's anonymous money. It is the enemy of a modern U.S. or any dictatorial style government, period. They want to know how much money you have, what you spend it on, where you spend it, where you are. And if they don't like it, they want to shut it down. This is where this all leads. It will be an all-out war on private transactions. That means they'll do everything they can to regulate or even outright ban currencies like Bitcoin, I believe. And all of it will be hailed as the next great step in technology. Meanwhile, your privacy rights are shredded. Some analysts think this will happen within the next 2 years, maybe before the U.S. midterms. I don't know. They want this crammed through quickly, however. They can't have any of those pesky conservatives taking the House and throwing up roadblocks on this. If that timetable is true, then my fears on rising inflation could kick off soon. It would give them the perfect leverage to force a U.S. digital dollar sooner than expected. When you can't bring the money back through your banks and get it back from the banks so you can destroy it at the Federal Reserve, through interest rates, how do you do it? Well, you put a dent in all that excess money floating around by digitizing everything. However, you're converting. So I can't guarantee that your old dollars are going to get converted one to one. I mean, that dollar isn't worth very much. So we're going to give you, how much money do you make? Where do you live? What's your job? Are you white? Yeah, I can't give you one to one. I maybe can give you 40 cents on the dollar. This has happened in country after country multiple times. Guess who gets screwed every time? You do. People in power, they get it. The special classes, they'll get it. Do the right thing with the government, you'll get it. But you have $1 million in the bank? Nobody needs that much. You now have $400,000 in the bank. Oh, you have $1,000 in the bank? And you're black, brown, just liberal, white, but with BLM? Okay. Yeah, you've got $10,000 in the bank now. In 1775, the old continental dollars were converted to U.S. dollars. The conversion was 99 to 1. In 1814, the first bank of the U.S. charter expired and the U.S. government defaulted on bonds in the first bank. Bondholders were offered longer-term shares in the second bank of the U.S. at 10 to 1. In the 1860s, we got greenbacks, the dollar, Civil War dollars converted to U.S. dollars. They were technically retired from circulation, but greenback holders were allowed to sell greenbacks for U.S. bonds or for silver certificates, but 2-to-1. In 1933, the U.S. government required all Americans to convert U.S. dollars, silver certificates, or gold-bearing dollars into the Federal Reserve notes, not backed by gold or silver, at a 1-to-1 ratio. But from 1933 to date, that paper U.S. dollar holders, we've lost 99% of our purchase value already. Gold and silver certificates today would have been 80 times their face value in purchasing power. In 1978, U.S. bondholders were asked to exchange 9% interest-bearing bonds for a lesser amount of non-interest-bearing paper currency. 80% accepted the terms and got screwed. That's the theme here. Every time this has occurred, you get screwed. There's twice the amount of money in circulation due to inflation. Okay. Without any social justice, let's make the conversion 2-to-1. No, check that, 3-to-1. A $200,000 savings account could go to $100,000 or lower just at the flip of a switch. This is not to scare you. It is to prepare you. Because as we get closer, no one will be asking these questions. Not on privacy, not on what it means for people like you or me. Do your banking at the most local level that you can. Invest the things that have actual intrinsic value because the world is changing. Financial institutions are being weaponized to further this change. I recently sat down with a former executive of a company that you heard me talk about lately, BlackRock. It's an inside look at what the financial world is really up to. Back in a minute. You know, I said at the beginning of the program today that this is why I've been telling you about American financing, to get a low interest loan now. Get it now, because it's going to get harder and harder to get a loan. Please don't wait too long. Please, American financing. I've known these people since 2007, and they were not sponsors on my program. It wasn't until after I looked at how everybody that had a loan with them survived in 2008. And I had confidence that they do work for you and not for the banks. So, AmericanFinancing.net. Call them now. You can save money by refinancing, getting a new mortgage, or just doing a consolidation loan. That would save you a lot of money. Find out how you can shore up your financial situation with AmericanFinancing.net. 800-906-2440. I've been talking lately a lot on this program about how financial institutions are now working in tandem with the left by assigning ESG scores to businesses. By and large, companies are being bludgeoned into submission. Last week, over 100 major corporations came together in a private phone call to discuss their solidarity in opposing policy decisions like the new voting laws in Georgia. I don't know when anyone elected the president of Woke-a-Cola to tell me what good policy looks like and what bad policy looks like, but I'll have none of it. The ESG ratings are a complete end run around the system, and it enables these corporations to gain more power. I think it's a scam. That's all it's about, is money and power. Well, recently I sat down with a former executive of another organization I've been talking about, BlackRock. It was his job at BlackRock to lead sustainable investment for the largest money manager in the world. He later discovered that the system he helped create, the ESG system, was doing nothing for the environment, in fact, doing damage. And he said it was being taken advantage to make these giant corporations and people rich. Here is part of my conversation with Tarek Fancy.
So ESG is an acronym that seems to sort of stuck for not a great reason, but it's just a grouping of what are thought of as non-financial indicators. Really, the one people care about are environmental and social, right? The governance bit just talks about corporate governance, and that's, people have known that for decades. But the new ones are the E and the S. And in a sense, an ESG rating or ESG data is kind of like a measurement of the virtue of a company or how responsible that company is, right? And so the idea is that if you produce renewable energy, you probably have a higher ESG score, all else being equal. And if you're extracting fossil fuels, you'll probably have a lower ESG score. And the idea is now that people are, in theory, looking at that data when they make an investment, right? They're saying, oh, this company has a high ESG score. And the thought that people have is that, therefore, at BlackRock and everywhere else, they're going to go out and say, well, this company has a higher ESG score, so we should invest in it because we back responsible companies. In reality, they have legal obligations and financial incentives to focus on the most profitable company, regardless of whether the rating is good or bad.
So who gives the
promise of that being done is, in some sense, convincing people that there's real activity going on to, you know, to address these issues, and there's generally not.
Who is the one that gives the score out?
There's a variety of third-party companies that just give ESG ratings, and it's kind of a new space, so there's a lot of specific players and bigger ones, smaller ones, but you either look at it as a single score, so this company gets a 7 out of 10 in ESG, or you break that data down into individual components, because under the E environment, you'll have a whole set of other specific indicators around emissions, around, you know, wastewater treatment, this, that, and the other.
So how independent are these? I mean, it seems a little weird that somebody is setting standards of what's right and wrong, and the public's not really kind of part of that. And it has so much money revolving around it. It could go bad quickly. Who are these private companies?
Well, I mean, there's an interesting question in terms of like who they are and their incentives. I mean, generally speaking, it seems like their goal is to produce data that investment managers can use, and they can charge a lot of money for it. And I'm not sure the extent to which they're making moral decisions in those. But honestly, I'd be far less concerned with how the data is being used, because I would tell you it's not being used all that much, and more concerned with the fact that the entire industry seems to be, it creates the impression to people that something is being done, that, hey, like, there is good stuff happening. Like, Wall Street's got this, right? All of the challenges we find in society, well, clearly politicians are not solving them. That's the thought process, and therefore we can rely on this mechanism. And this mechanism doesn't do that, because that's not how the financial markets were structured to work. They're structured to chase profits. And it doesn't matter what the ESG score is. It doesn't matter that a bunch of good students decide to divest of a fossil fuel company. It does absolutely nothing, because I can tell you the 25 hedge funds who will buy that stock afterwards, so long as the profit opportunity is still there. And I know that because I used to work at a firm like that, and that's just how the market works, right? It's meant to work like that. Even if you go and you tell JP Morgan, hey, stop financing fossil fuels. Okay, great. You go to a few high profile banks, they stop doing it. But the market's the market, right? The shadow banking sector, as it's called, is over 100 trillion. So what you're getting with all the CSG stuff is really not something where it's, you know, they're making these ratings and they're affecting society and we should be worried about that. It's actually not that. It's that they're making these ratings and they're not really being used in any substantive way to either improve investing outcomes, which is the claim that Wall Street makes, and I can tell you doesn't work, or especially to create any social impact. And that's the worry we should be focused on, right? It's like if climate change is like cancer, right? And it's slowly spreading like a cancer. This is like giving wheatgrass to the cancer patient. There's no reason to believe it's going to stop the cancer. And I decided to speak out publicly because, number one, I looked at what was happening and I realized that actually after I left, I thought, well, wait a second, they're marketing this wheatgrass so effectively that they're actually delaying what policy experts are telling us we need to do to fight climate change. Right. There's a host of things around that, from prices on carbon to a whole bunch of other tools. And so it's kind of like you're giving wheatgrass to the cancer patient, and then you realize that actually they're delaying chemo because we've promised so much with this wheatgrass that, let's be honest, if you gave me a choice between wheatgrass and chemo and a plausible reason to believe that wheatgrass is the answer, I mean, I've never been a cancer patient, but I'm pretty sure I'd pick the wheatgrass.
Pray for your nation. Pray for us as we'll pray for you. Thanks for watching. More on radio tomorrow. From Dallas, good night, America.